Breakfast puppies?
We're all set to begin, so let's dive right in to Bikers, Dice, and Bars. Talking bicycles and motorbikes, gamer things and all the like. You can listen to it in your cars, but mostly it's about dive bars. Bikers, Dice, and Bars.
Don't want to set the world on fire, but I do want to know what Xander is drinking right now.
I, in honor of the blood bugs, am drinking the Vicious Mosquito IPA from Sun River Brewing. Vicious. The viciousest of the mosquitoes. Out of Sun River, Oregon. Liberal use of fine Northwest hops to find this resinous IPA, and I would call it very resinous.
Sorry.
As much in like full of resin?
Much like the resonance you'll get off of trying to attack a blood bug when it spits blood on your face.
So, by the way, Xander, what am I drinking right now?
You are drinking a Samuel Adams White Christmas limited release.
Oh, interesting. Hazy, crisp, and bright. Something else that you brought here. I believe that we were seeking thematic beers for some of our subject matter for this evening, and you had a problem finding the Sam Adams.
Yeah, well, the Safeway nearby used to be pretty, shitty, and so they had a lot of shitty beer, and then I went in there recently, and they had moved everything all around, and now it's full of delicious craft beer, so finding Samuel Adams was a little tricky, unless it was a seasonal cinnamon and nutmeg-infused special Christmas release.
Speaking of something that's not a special Christmas release, you're listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars here recorded in Portland, Oregon. As usual, I'm NPC.
Just Jacob.
Dr. Xander Gerrymander.
Poppy Beaujolais.
And Wenzel, like tinsel but with an L.
Wenzel, what are you drinking?
I'm foregoing alcohol tonight because I suffer from gout. Exciting. The thrill of hereditary diseases.
Oh, yippee. But what are you drinking right now?
I'm drinking a little apricot sparkling water. It looks like you've got something a little warmer and rejuvenating as well, Bobby.
I do. I am a little under the weather this evening, so I made myself a hot toddy. That is just lemon juice, honey, bullet, bourbon.
Oh, there we go.
Some hot water.
Excellent. Is that dirty water or purified water?
Would you say you're suffering from a nuclear winter?
It's tap water that I boiled.
Watch out for those rats.
Oh yeah, watch out for those rats. So yeah, this is our special wasteland themed episode. We're going to be talking about all manner of things related to surviving in the waste, our experiences surviving in the waste, and I don't know, maybe a special report from one of our favorite bars out in the wasteland.
Ooh. Time to go get wasted in the wasteland.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let's take this to the road.
We're going to start off by talking about riding around the wasteland.
Ooh. So many freeways.
So many freeways that may be choked with cars.
That's right.
Or bombed.
You know, it's a good
or
question.
Or fallen. Okay.
How long do you think those cars would remain there in a wasteland that's being recovered by people? Like,
well, that's
scrapping pretty fast, I think.
Well, that raises the first point. It's like, how far has society slid? Are we dealing with a crack or a total failure? And that conversation goes beyond the scope of this. But
fair enough.
You know, I mean, if you're looking at something short of atomic exchange, 85% casualty loss in the U.S., you know, things will clear up pretty fast. But it also depends on exactly what happened. You know, if we have a cascade fault event, well, there'll be a lot of survivors able to move the cars. It's where are they going to move the cars to? How much road did we lose? What are you going to use to move them off? You know, that sort of thing.
Probably won't have any freeways still standing after the Cascadian subduction zone takes its toll.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's elevated is going to be going down. Most bridges are gone.
Yep.
You know, that's it.
The rise of the Portland ferryman is back.
Woohoo!
That is my post-apocalyptic dream job.
Be a ferryman.
Yes.
Okay, yes. So here's a question then. Let's talk about, I do have a little bit of curiosity when it comes to comets falling from the skies and California falling into the sea and all of that stuff. When the floods come and that subduction zone hits, is there going to be any safe high ground in Portland?
Yes.
Where?
Mount Tabor.
Okay.
For sure.
What about Rocky Butte?
Yep.
Rocky Butte's also good. All right. Powell Butte is questionable.
Council Crest.
There's some Council Crest. So when you get over to the West Hills, there's a lot of solid geological formations. The problem with the West Hills is there's a question on whether or not you'll get what's called surface shear, where the earthquake causes the looser material on top to literally fall off.
Oh.
Of the believed strata of Council Crest, it's thought to be geologically unstable and anything greater than a 6 degree level.
Mm-hmm. So. I did apologize. I did interrupt you. You were talking about Powell Butte, though.
No, Powell Butte is
it's a
broken up structure. So it's going to shift around a fair amount. You don't want to be on top of it when the earthquake happens. But after it happens, good place to be.
Good to know.
Well, let's say that the apocalypse has hit us. And, you know, let's just go ahead and default to the classic apocalypse of a nuclear apocalypse.
Is that everybody's favorite apocalypse?
Oh, yeah.
Civilization has collapsed. Everything has fallen apart. And we're just now coming back into this new world. Now,
coming out of our bunkers.
Yes.
Yeah. Coming out of the bunkers.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got to get from point A to point B.
Yeah.
Outside of the going full Mad Max and grabbing a car and lighting it up and
taking whatever's not sticking down and just tack it onto it.
Exactly. This is Bikers, Dice, and Bars. We're going to talk about bikes. We're going to talk about motorcycles versus bicycles. There's a couple things that apply to both. You want water, fuel, spare parts, and oil.
For literally both of them.
For literally both of them. It's what constitutes fuel is what changes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I will always have my Chevro legs. So fuel's taken care of for that.
You'll always have cheese legs?
Chevro
legs. Chevrolet.
That's
goat cheese legs. Oh.
Okay. Please excuse my friend. Okay. He's being satirical.
Oh,
thanks. I got goaded into that one.
Satirical.
Anyways, so it partially depends where you're going and what you're doing. And it also depends what sort of apocalypse we're talking here. If you have like a total loss of the human population, there's going to be a fair amount of cars parked around.
Just floating around.
A lot of fuel.
So get yourself a nice 250cc KLR that's got a bulletproof, nearly non-electric engine. Probably going to start even if we had an EMP event. And a hose for siphoning, and you can be cruising around.
Do not, as Daryl did, get a Triumph Cruiser.
No.
Worst fucking bike.
There are rules.
There are bad bikes.
Yes.
But I'm hard-pressed to think of a worse bike to have in an apocalypse.
Why?
Than the one that he rode in The Walking Dead show.
Yes.
Doesn't gasoline go bad after 6 months?
It does last longer than that. We are better off if it is not winter when the stuff happens.
Okay.
Because the stabilizers they put in gas for the winter months actually make it go bad faster.
Really?
It all depends how the gasoline's stored.
Mm.
So that is a factor. The 6 month thing is iffy.
Is it just diminishing returns that the gas is not as as useful, or is it just that it ceases to be of value at all?
So there's a lot of debate around that. I mean, like in my personal experience, I've pulled a three gallon container of gas that's been stored for at least 2 years and fired up a chainsaw with it.
Sure.
But at the same time, I have had cars that wouldn't turn over because they sat for 8 months. And even though everything else worked for it, once we drained the gas and refilled that, it fires up. There's a lot of chemical factors that go into it. There's a lot of storage factors, heat, pressure, containment. Yeah.
That kind of sounds like a 0.1 to bicycle, if you ask me.
0.1 to bicycle.
Because it seems like after a while, if you have no refinery capabilities, you have no ability to go and create new gasoline from your petroleum sources. And if you're talking about gasoline going bad after, you know, 6 months to say, let's say even 2 years, depending on storage conditions, it seems that you're kind of SOL after a while with anything that is powered by gasoline.
However, a lot of smaller bikes, it is actually not that hard, especially for kickstart bikes, to convert them over to ethanol.
Hmm.
And doing ethanol is pretty straightforward.
I honestly, as cool as it looks and as cool as it sounds and of all the games that I play where it's a thing that you can do, motorcycles seem like probably one of the least logical things to ride in the wasteland if you're on your own, because of all of the things, the upkeep, the cleaning,
loud,
the noise, yeah. The fuel, not just the fuel, but the oil, the maintenance, the tires. Mm-hmm. So much easier to fix a bicycle tire than it is to fix a fucking motorcycle tire.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Maybe we get a bicycle.
It all depends on what you're going to be doing with it. If you're going on a great cross-country track, your motorcycle is probably not the best option. Contrary to what we've all learned from Mad Max and such, cars aren't actually particularly good. They are more prone to mechanical failure. They're harder to repair on your own and without specialized equipment. They don't handle rough road conditions or cross country at all well.
With
no roads, yeah.
Yeah. So it comes down to bicycles versus motorcycles.
Well, and I'm also thinking about the sort of classic scene in Terminator 2 where they show the, you know, Sarah's dream of the bomb going off and everything.
With the chain link fence.
Getting obliterated. Yeah, that whole scene. And I'm thinking about, like, you know, when the blast wave hits, like everything just gets kind of obliterated. And I'm wondering if any of our modern, let's say, you know, bomb goes off, Portland, boom, tomorrow. Would any of our modern vehicles even survive the blast wave? Because it's not like our vehicles are made of, you know, steel. There's a lot of plastic components. There's
anything that's caught in the atomic blast likely is not going to survive.
That's assuming that there's an atomic blast, you know, mathematically structured every X number of miles across a plane there. So typically the apocalypse, if it's a nuclear apocalypse, my assumption would be whoever hits us would hit our major population centers. Honestly, the mountains in the Midwest would probably be largely untouched simply because of the logistics of firing a nuke across the country from another, you know, from the waters.
Yeah.
By the time it reaches the Midlands, we'd have shot it down. But the coastal cities, our major population areas, L.A., San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Atlanta, they're gone.
They're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you will not be able to find functional vehicles in Atlanta.
Yeah. But in Hayes,
much like
Kansas,
today.
Hayes, Kansas.
Hayes, Kansas is where it's going to be at.
Hayes, Kansas is not going to be around.
You don't think so?
Oh, I know so.
Why is that?
Because Kansas is one of the largest concentrations on ICBMs, that's intercontinental ballistic missiles, which means it's first strike for a transpolar strike.
Oh,
but
shit.
All of those car lots in the Dakotas and Montana.
Fine.
Dakotas.
Yep.
Nuclear missile country. Montana, you're doing better there. Yeah, yeah. You're doing a lot better there.
Louisiana.
Louisiana's...
No one's going to bomb the swamp.
What's going to end up happening, though, is they're going to hit all the refineries along the Gulf Coast.
Oh, that's right.
So you'll have massive oil spills there, which will just wreck everything along that kind of Gulf Coast region.
True.
However, Mississippi will be fine because who the fuck would want to do anything to that?
You know, I love the assumption that this nuclear strike is coming to attack the Americans. Like, I love the notion that it's an impossibility for us to imagine that there'd be two other countries that have some nuclear strike and that we're dealing with the apocalyptic winter based on that.
Yes.
It's always like somebody attacking
us.
We're top dogs.
So it's not like India and Pakistan go at it.
When China and Russia or India and Pakistan do their exchange...
Well, again, we're going with the classic fictional nuclear apocalypse. You know, everything's chaos. The infrastructure's gone, and everyone's died. But let's go with let's follow this and go with a different style of apocalypse. Mm. There was a book I read. Well, I never finished it. It was a really good book. I got halfway through it and then got distracted. Called Earth Abides.
Yep.
And it's, I didn't realize when I started reading it what year it was set in. Yeah. I did not realize how old that book is.
Oh, yeah.
It's from like, what, the 50s, yes. I think? And it is about one day this guy gets sick. He goes to a cabin in the woods. He fights off the sickness, comes out. Everyone on the earth is dead.
Mm. Oh.
Except for a handful of people that he encounters. But the book is literature. It is really well written.
Yep.
It is like reading. It is, to me, on the level of like Grapes of Wrath style literature. And at one point in the book, he goes back into town from his cabin and he gets a truck. I think he either has a truck or he takes a truck that still has the keys in it. And this is before I realized what year it was. And then he's like, yeah, then I found this motorcycle. So I just sort of picked it up and strapped it onto the back of my truck. And then I'm like, you did fucking what? You just picked it up?
A 125cc motorcycle back in the day was not that heavy.
Yeah. And then I looked back. I was like, oh, This is olden times.
Now, that's an interesting question. Would you be better off with a much smaller dirt bike style operation, or would you be better off with something that's going to have long distance travel in mind?
I think it really depends on how bad the area you're in is, because as we're kind of discussed, bicycles seem to be superior to motorcycles and most other kind of fuel based vehicles in the apocalyptic wasteland. So unless you have a real good need to get somewhere quickly, like I don't know.
To get away from the cannibals, perhaps?
Sure, I can still bike faster than a cannibal. But, you know, because if they're trying to eat me,
right.
How fucking skinny I am, they'd have to be malnourished.
What
at
about
that
a
point.
Cannibal on a bicycle?
Still would beat them. So, but my whole point being, though, is that unless you have a real need to just like blaze across the country for the first time ever, I don't know why you'd need something that uses fuel. You can just go and bike and you'll probably be much better off and much better exercised.
So here's why you wouldn't want a bicycle. Like I said, it all depends what you're doing. They're two different tools with different roles. If we're dealing with a classic post-atomic exchange, bicycle starts to lose points badly for a couple of reasons. One, bicycles require you to exert physical effort, so you burn calories at a higher rate, which, depending on where you are and what food sources are available, that's a factor.
Circumstantial, yeah. Continue.
Bicycles require you to exert yourself, so if you're dealing in any sort of fallout situation, you're inhaling more, which means greater chance of exposure. Even with filter masks and stuff, you're still better.
But you're traveling through more potentially dangerous areas faster with a motorcycle.
Correct. So you're getting through them faster. And the last
and going
one
through more.
And the last part is that if you're outside of the Pacific Northwest, you get to the point of diminishing returns on spare parts.
I know what kind of motorcycle I would want in the wasteland.
What's that?
And it's whatever motorcycle Claudio was riding in Long Way Round, the Red Devil.
The Red Devil.
Because as we saw.
The cameraman Claudio.
Yes, the cameraman Claudio in Long Way Round. Because as we saw. On that terrain in, God, where were they? Like
Kazakhstan?
No.
This was when they were in Mongolia.
This is when they were in
point.
Mongolia, yeah. which is pretty yeah. wasteland-esque in parts of it. Yeah. The heavy BMWs with all the gear on it didn't do as well as just, the Red Devil. He just sailing right past him.
He is just kipping along yep. on that, bought it for $100 at a bazaar
yeah.
fucking cruiser.
Yep. And I want whatever motorcycle Claudio had. That's yep. what I want.
Talking about all of that, let's get down to what is actually, you know, we've talked about how cars aren't all that practical. Depending on what you're doing, a motorcycle or a bicycle has different roles. If you're in one area and you're running around and want to haul higher loads, potentially motorcycle might be better. If in a lot of cases, a bicycle is going to be a lot better. However, the one that I want when it finally goes up and I have three locations to get it, give me a horse.
Mm-hmm. I think in any apocalypse that's not the zombie apocalypse, the horse is the better solution.
Honestly, no, because that horse gets injured.
Then
one injury.
Dinner.
Then yeah, I know, dinner. But then it's over. Where do you, how are you going to preserve that dinner? Where are you going to store the food? Sure, you can salt it, but guess what? Now you have no more mode of transportation. You can
stick yourself.
The problem, you can't you repair
can screw yourself
a horse
pretty badly.
Unless you're a wasteland horse. Veterinarian. Mm. In that case, well, you need a horse.
I want a camel.
Mm.
They're built for walking on sand.
Okay, so here's the deal, Poppy. Where are you going to find a camel in Portland, Oregon in the apocalypse?
The zoo?
Okay, where are you going to find a camel in Portland, Oregon in the apocalypse?
Oh, right, because they're outside. They probably all died.
They're probably all dead.
There's some fucking weirdo in the West Hills who has a camel in his indoor zoo. I just know it.
Well, I hope your search skill is real good.
This is Portland. There are some fucking weirdo over there in the West Hills and one of them big old houses who's like, yeah, I got a camel. What?
Folks, watch the spot for an upcoming corner with Uncle Jake talks about prepping 101.
I do want to note here, though, that... one thing that I learned from the movie Zombieland is you got to do half cardio.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a bicycle.
Mm-hmm. You,
and they're all like driving around during that zombie apocalypse. I don't know. They never fuel up. That Hummer that they're riding around in doesn't make a lot of sense. The worst decision ever.
It's like 6 miles to the gallon or something.
And so let's talk about not a nuclear apocalypse, but let's talk about the Earth Abides apocalypse. You wake up and everyone's dead but you. And you, at least everyone that you know, everyone in your vicinity is dead. Maybe the population of Earth has been reduced to like a millionth of a percent.
I feel like if you're in that situation, you don't need a car, a bicycle, or a motorcycle. You're finally at peace alone in a city that you love.
But what if you don't want to be and you want to get around?
Oh, you want to go somewhere else? Yeah.
I mean, again, at that point, then you can probably, because the infrastructure presumably at that point is still intact.
But it won't be for long.
No, then you just kind of go and you find whatever good sized vehicle that you need and you go and you pack it up with everything that you want with enough fuel because there's no one else to take it.
Okay.
And you just go to wherever you want to go. And at that point, too, I think even a larger, you know, truck or SUV or pickup truck possibly would be a better option.
1 year later, what do you do for fuel?
Well, again, you've gotten to where you wanted to go now, so it's okay.
Yeah, I know, but
just
you're
trying
still
to get to wherever
to get
those canned food.
You that's, get to where you want to go, but let's say
that's when you convert over to wood ethanol.
Mm. Wood ethanol, yep. Okay.
And you're going to want to do that anyway for a whole bunch of reasons. Water purification being the first part.
Hmm. All right.
Okay, then.
Fascinating.
I got a quick question for the motorcycle nerds. If you were actively trying to outrun a nuclear blast, what's your best bike option?
Outrun a nuclear
blast. Well, hey, I'm just, you know.
I see movies.
So have you ever seen the Tomahawk X?
Mm. No. Is this some super special secret thing?
It's a what was it? An 8-cylinder car motor motorcycle that could go over 200 miles an hour. And that's what you want on a preferably a straight, flat piece of land with no obstacles because you can't steer.
Right. And you want a head start, too.
And you want a head start. And even then. So I'm a little bit older than you. I grew up with, you know, the nuclear war being a reality.
Sure.
And so if you're close enough where you need to be concerned about a strike, it's like, are you going to have enough time for when the notice goes out to pray? That's about it.
Plus, you got to get your sunglasses on. Otherwise, you know, you're going to go blind, too.
Wait, you mean I can't just, like, duck and cover?
Duck and cover, buddy.
No, idiot. That's what like the Iron Giant. What refrigerators are for.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Put you and whatever you're trying. If you're on a motorcycle or bicycle, put yourself in a ditch with the vehicle on its side and just hope for the best. That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so any last words for those who wish to currently prepare their dream two-wheeled vehicle as preppers for the apocalypse?
Go through and convert over to as many analog components as possible.
Mm.
Get yourself a backup chain.
Couple of them.
This and get yourself a nice little container of oil appropriate for lubrication. You can probably let oil in a pan go for a while, but both bicycles and motorcycles need it to keep going. And beyond that, have a toolkit.
I got another question for you. If you were going to strip off parts of your bicycle for weight and for fuel economy, what are the first things that you're most likely to pull off in an apocalypse? The things that you aren't going to need as much?
Fenders.
fenders.
You know, obviously anything you can do to lighten the load is going to increase your fuel.
Rear view mirrors.
Saddles. You don't need it. Just sit on the post.
Mirrors. I mean, really? Seriously, if I'm going to take a bicycle into the apocalypse, we're going to be ditching the cassettes and going either single speed fixie or a very, very low set community gear that's going to put less wear and tear and less prone to being jacked
less
up.
Less things to go wrong.
Maybe the only time that having a fixie is ever appropriate, Portland.
Yeah, unless you're trying to like ride across the Cascades.
Well, honestly, I would think that you would want to invest, again, assuming you have time to plan for this, you want to invest in a generator and have that attached to your bicycle.
Oh, go with the dynamo.
So that you can just pedal around and generate energy. And maybe you can use that energy later to do whatever, or you can use it to power your lights, or you can use it to power your temporary electrical assist burst.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty crafty.
Yeah. Well,
I guess we're prepared for the apocalypse now.
I guess we're prepared for the apocalypse
oh,
here.
Oh, God.
Thanks, Jacob. When the sirens yell, I'm not going to call you first. I'm going to call Ross, our buddy, the old Villa Gorilla, because I know that he's got a bigger gun collection than you.
That's
However,
fine.
If you're still alive.
Only for a couple more months.
if you're still alive, I'll come to you for survival tips.
With an arsenal.
So then we'll be prepared and we'll have the Biker's Dice and Bar Survival Guild. This would be great.
I know where I'm going to be when the bomb goes off. I'm going to be sitting with a bottle of yellow spot, put my head between my legs and kiss my ass goodbye.
I know we've referenced this multiple times this evening, and now we're going to dive right into the wonderful world of Fallout. Fallout, the computer video role-playing games that I think everyone here has some level of experience with, be it as a player or as a temporary widow to Fallout. It is one of those franchises that has spanned multiple eras of computer and console video gaming.
Well, I can certainly start way back in the day as one of the ancient ones. I remember the original Wasteland. I used to play the old school on my old Amiga, and it was a brutal game that basically did not spoon feed in any shape or form and had a tendency to leave you needing to reload a game because it was a lot of death involved. But I do remember a lot of good times with it.
I'm right there with you, bro. Wasteland's the original Fallout.
So I want to be cool and say that I have played this, but I never have.
Yeah.
I never played the original Wasteland. It was before my time.
Yeah.
I didn't get into Fallout. Shit, I didn't actually own Fallout until years later. I think I was really into like the Baldur's Gate series. Mm-hmm. And then
poor man.
My brother got me into the Baldur's Gate series. And my buddy's like, if you like Baldur's Gate, you should play it with guns. And then he introduced me. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Not at all the same game, but very similar.
Because I'm going to say, as I think the youngest person at this table, that I first got into Fallout 3. I saw someone playing it in our friend circle. And I went, oh, post-apocalyptic, what in Washington, D.C.? And
no, Fallout, you said
three. Yeah. And so the post-apocalyptic genre in film and in games and in literature has always been probably my favorite to just immerse myself in. So to find out there is an entire game series dedicated to this, that was cool. So and well done just made me so excited that I spent many.
We talked through many of those evenings.
Sure did.
I remember when that game came out. We were friends at that point,
yes.
And it was constantly like, Xander, IMing you, have you done this? He's like, no, I haven't. Shut up. Yes, let me know when you have. I want to know which button you press.
Yeah, I feel like everything from Fallout 3 onward has a very, very different identity as the stuff that comes prior. And it's very difficult at this point to go back to Fallout 1 or 2, Fallout Tactics, or the original Wasteland. I feel like those games have a lot of UI and so quality of life thing aspects to them that most modern gamers would have a hard time dealing with as far as save points and that kind of aspect. I feel like everything from 3 on has a much more modern sense to it, and it's very difficult to go backwards for me anyway, even with nostalgia.
I can agree with that. I find the Fallout 1 and Fallout 2 are borderline unplayable for me today, even though I really enjoyed playing them
at the time
in the early 2000s when I was finally introduced to them. I can't. They're tough. And I know that there's a company called Beamdog that has been doing modernized HD, they call them enhanced edition remakes of the Baldur's Gate and all of the Infinity Engine games and the Neverwinter Nights game, Planescape and Icewind Dale and all that. I would fucking love to see them get the original two Fallout games and do a quality of life remake. Is basically what they're doing. They just take these games. It's still the same game. It's even still compatible with all those games' mods. But you can now play Baldur's Gate with an engine that can span the entire resolution of your gaming monitor.
That would be nice.
And remappable keys and kind of stuff. And I would love to see them take on Fallout, and it's never going to happen because Bethesda, hell, yeah. They got issues.
Our chicken has issues?
I started in the true Fallout series. I played 1 and I played 2. And I fell out around Tactics. And I've never actually played Fallout 3, New Vegas, 4, 76.
Have you played Fallout Brotherhood of Steel?
Oh, no, I have not.
So I haven't even heard of that.
Steel was a console game, and it was made by Snowblind. They were famous for the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance series and for the Champions of Norrath series. They also, I think, did with Warner Brothers, the Lord of the Rings War of the North game. I don't remember. Anyway, they do these kind of action RPGs, and they did Fallout Brotherhood of Steel. Now, most Fallout fans loathe this game. That said, I'll bet you, dear listeners, most Fallout fans have never actually played it and are parroting what a lot of other hardcore people, for example, from the No Mutants Allowed forums are saying. Brotherhood of Steel was a fun action RPG. It was just fucking Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance with guns. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. But
is it isometric?
It's kind of an overhead action game, kind of like Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, Champions of Norrath, or any of those overhead beat-em-ups.
Gotcha.
So at what point did we all decide that this was a series that we love? What was the moment that really sucked us in to where we went, I want to keep doing this?
War. War never changes.
It was Ron Perlman.
That was the moment?
That was the moment.
Ron Perlman. Wow, yeah. I had no idea that was Ron Perlman.
Oh, yeah.
That opening narration of the first Fallout, that opening cinematic. Oh, Ron Perlman has done that voice all the way through Fallout New Vegas. He didn't do it.
Really?
In Fallout 4. He had a different role in the beginning of Fallout 4, but the Fallout 4 voice was narrated by your character.
You know, I was going to say Fallout 3 for me, the big changer, even though I played Wasteland and I played Fallout 1, I didn't play 2 or Tactics. In Fallout 3, the collection of the Wasteland Survival Guide was absolutely the thing that kind of won me over, that I was like, oh, I really like this idea to be like collecting information, standing in irradiated fluid, falling long distances to cripple myself so that I could somehow write a better book about Wasteland survival.
Because Moira is the best.
Oh, yeah, don't you know? Come on out to get those Morats there, eh?
It's a shame I had to nuke her.
Oh, you took out Megaton? Bastard.
Oh, yeah. So
you tenpenny sons of...
I wanted that place in the tower.
You're a bad man. I used to like you.
What about you? What was the moment that got you in? That sold you?
for me, again, having I started with Fallout 3, and I believe it was actually something that you had said while we were playing the game, and that was, if seeing our nation's capital in absolute ruin doesn't at some point tug at your heartstrings in some way, then you are probably not meant for this country.
It's hard.
And, yeah. You know, again, being a lover of all this kind of music that was always put in there before, the opening cinematic for Fallout 3 was the first one that I ever saw. Hmm. And then just listening to the Ink Spots, whom I've already loved, and then pulling out of the bus with Little Hula Girl. And then seeing the Washington Monument just halfway stripped bare. As soon as I saw that, I went, I think I'm going to like this series. And then...
Well, as soon as that opens, that teaser trailer that was released for it, as soon as that starts and you hear the... You're like... It pulls you in. If you were a former... player of the original games, you know that sound, you know that music, and then it goes into a song that you hadn't heard before because you also probably never looked up any of the other Ink Spot songs, and you probably didn't really know that all of their songs start the same.
Yeah. Well, they did the same funny thing too with the intro to Fallout 76 for their teaser trailers. They started off with that 3-bar thing and then went into
John Denver, wasn't it?
West Virginia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So for me, what got me hooked was, as much as I liked the cinematic for the first one, it was rolling out of the vault gate with nothing but a pistol. Good luck. And I'm like...
You fall out one?
Yeah, fall out one.
You gotta kill those rats?
And it's like, I have to beat the shit out of some rats. Just like I really would. Then I was kind of disappointed that I couldn't keep them for food. But, you know, that's why I played Dayar Survival now.
Yeah, your character wasn't quite hungry enough at that point to eat rat.
Right. See, when the balloon goes up, I'm all in, man.
Poppy, what was your favorite moment of the Fallout series?
All of them, go.
Probably telling you about, well, there's a... you know, there's a, did you look behind the,
Maybe the,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
I told you to go look for something as a, anyway, I knew some information you did not know based off of other information that I had. #vaguebook.
Yeah, there's nothing better than playing a game and having somebody ride along next to you with all of the answers.
I didn't know. That's the thing, is I have like never seen this game before.
This was a pop culture reference that she knew that we're going to get into later in the show.
Later in the show.
Listener, you will not be left hanging.
You will not be left hanging, yes.
We promise.
As NPC mentioned before, I was a Fallout 4 widow for about a week in November.
It was
of
about 2 weeks.
A week or two. Yeah, it was November weeks. Of 2012, 2013. When did that come out?
Whenever that game...
2015.
When was that game, 2015?
I took 2 weeks off of work.
He took time off of
to
work.
Play that game.
Yeah, yeah.
I told my boss, I need 2 weeks off.
I'm going on a trip to D.C.
I told my boss this
Boston, months
in advance. And I was like, and I said,
well,
I said, boss, I need 2 weeks off. And they're like, OK, well, what are you? Sure. Yeah, we can do that. You got enough PTO. What are you doing? I said, I'm going to Boston. They're like, oh, yeah. You should probably buy your plane tickets. It's like, yeah, I already did. It costs about $120. I got a special edition and I got a wrist computer. And they're like, what? Like, I'm playing Fallout 4 for 2 weeks, said you are not going to hear from me. And they looked at me and said, I understand. And I'm glad you were the first one to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I was a Fallout widow for about 2 weeks because it was you and one of my best friends at the time were both big Fallout 4. So I was there's like these, so the two people I spend like the most of my time with were just like, nope, see you later, baby. Gonna go play Fallout 4.
The best part is that me and that person were exchanged. You were talking about Fallout the whole time.
I'm sure you were, which is fine.
I remember when, I think it was released at midnight it was 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, midnight Eastern Standard Time, like November, whatever it was in 2015. I remember racing to the Best Buy or whatever because I needed to get a new mouse that was better for the sensitivity of playing the game.
I bought a new mouse for Fallout 4. I
did. Oh, my God, you too?
You guys are hardcore.
Like twinsies. BFFs.
They just fist bumped everybody. It was adorable.
And I went there, and then they actually had these Fallout Vault Boy masks, the plastic ones. And so I have one of those.
Why did you not wear it tonight?
I was like, so don't know where. You've lost half your Fallout shit here, too, tonight. Don't give me shit for this.
Okay.
And so.
Don't
and
then let me break out the jumpsuit.
Do it. So I remember racing back home and just like being like, all right, now it's 8:53. This is fine. Just going to wait another 7 minutes for this to come out and go. And just, again, I went 3 o'clock in the morning and it was just like, yeah, I'm just going to keep going. I don't give a shit right now.
When I got Fallout 4 on launch day, I got the special edition. I pre-ordered. And you know what, dear listener? I hear you talking about don't pre-order games. You know what? I pre-ordered goddamn Fallout 4 and I had a good reason. I like Fallout. So I pre-ordered that game because I wanted it to arrive at my house on delivery day. I have issues with that pre-order and I'll talk about that in a bit, but I want to talk about why I was hesitant to play it on day one. And that was because I also pre-ordered the special edition day one of Fallout New Vegas. That game, I bought it. It was great, wonderful. Got it on PC, installed it day one, started playing it. Played it for 8 straight hours. Went to bed. Woke up the next day. All of my saves were deleted. Because of a bug that they had with Steam Cloud.
What? Bethesda products are never buggy.
With no wit. Hold on.
Hot take. Oh,
God. Fallout New Vegas wasn't a Bethesda product.
No, it was Obsidian.
It was an Obsidian project.
It was still based on Bethesda's engine.
It was, but it was an Obsidian. Obsidian wrote everything, and they wrote faulty code for interfacing with the Steam Cloud. And the Steam Cloud was programmed to overwrite your local save with the Steam Cloud regardless.
I blame Steam, really. That's Valve's issue.
All 8 hours of my day one were gone.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's the best part of the game. You get to play all that all over again.
I had taken a week off of work in that era to play Fallout New Vegas when it came out. I took a week off. I did not pick it up again for a week. It's like, fuck this game. I went and played Fallout 3 instead. So I was wary. I was hesitant to play Fallout 4 on day one. It was wonderful. It was a glorious experience. I loved everything about it. I had, before the game began, decided I was going to make a character based on my dad. My dad passed when I was 4 years old. I have very few memories of my dad, but I have a lot of pictures of him. And the memories that I do have about my dad were playing video games with him. Hmm. He would wake me up in the middle of the night. He had cancer and he was often awake at weird times. He would wake me up to come play a game that he called Space Turkeys, which was Space Invaders on our Intellivision gaming system. So it's like, okay, Fallout 4, it had something to do with Memorial Day. It either came out on Memorial Day or there was something released.
It was very close to Veterans Day.
Veterans Day, that was it. So
it was in November.
Yeah. And then I remember that the main character was supposed to be a soldier who would come back from a war. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, I'm going to play this as my dad. So I found an old picture of my dad. And I spent 2.5 hours in the character creation system holding up a picture of my dad next to my monitor, as I am painstakingly making my character look just like my dad. And I'm going to post a picture.
You did a really good job.
I've seen it.
It was a cathartic experience for me. And despite its bugs, and despite it not being what some people consider an RPG, it's probably my best Fallout experience to date.
So I have to ask, how did you feel when you, as your father, in-game...
Spoilers, watched
your mother get killed in like the very opening of the game.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That's not really much spoilers. That happens in the opening.
Yeah. So,
yeah, it's the first, right? Like first like
you
5 minutes.
You start in like a tube and you watch somebody kill your spouse. So
and like steal you
Yeah, that was pretty hard.
Yeah, it's a little strange.
And I'll tell you what was even more interesting was the thing that happens later.
Oh, that's right, of
when
course.
When you finally find your kid, that was tough.
Yeah, did they look like you?
No. Actually,
a little bit.
Yes.
A little bit.
Because I styled... You can go back and forth in the character creator. You can switch back and forth between your dad or between the male and the female version.
Sure.
So I went to the female version and I made her look kind of like, I don't really have that many pictures of my mom from that age, but I kind of made her look like my mom when she was younger, but not like I didn't spend as much time because I was more interested in what my dad was going to look like. And when I met my kid, looked just like me to the point that it was tough and I hated him because he was a prick.
He was totally a prick. So I guess there's something questionable. I wonder what a psychiatrist would say about somebody's tendency to want to put their parents into an apocalyptic wasteland. It's a little strange. Like, oh, here's like a destroyed planet. I think I want to put my parents into this game.
So, Poppy, sidebar, and we'll get back to you.
we'll go consult about that and get back to you.
I had a mental image of what my dad was like based on what a lot of people told me. And I played the character tried to respond, what would my father have responded? And it was the first time I'd played a Bethesda game and not stolen everything that wasn't nailed down before.
That's a very different
strong back
experience.
Every time, strong back.
What I would frequently stop, I would collect things, and he was an engineer, so I focused on intelligence. He was an electrical engineer, so I focused on creation and electronics and building robots and whatnot. I figured that's what he would do. But he was also a soldier, so I did soldier stuff.
He was a Marine.
He was a Marine.
Yeah.
And then, but he also liked beer. He would kick back a beer every now and then. He wouldn't like drink and get trash, but he did in the state and he'd have a beer. So I remember I would like go back to my shack where I had all my stuff, my workshop. I had a chair set down because my dad had a chair. He had his chair. So I found the chair that was closest to his chair, built it in his workshop, sit down on it, crack open a beer in your inventory and drink it. And there's no animation of it. There's no whatever. But for some reason, me going to my inventory, use beer. It's like, it's my dad.
There you go. Are there other games in the series that those of us have played? I know, like I'm, for example, I went back and have been playing Wasteland 2, the director's cut, which was a kickstarted tactical.
That was a lot of fun.
Isometric, really fun, really brutal. Well done.
Have not had a chance yet, but
a little brutal, but definitely worthwhile. I remember I started playing it, and then I think one of the XCOMs came out, and I kind of went away from it, and now I've come back to it, and I have to say I'm very happy I did.
Yeah.
So I think I've only seen you really play Fallout 4. I have myself not played it. I'm not super big into video games, but I remember you. Well, I know. Unless it's the anyway. But yeah, I remember very specifically you saying, you've got to watch the opening segment with me. And so we sat down for like an hour or two and watched you play from the very beginning. And I think that's the only one I've seen you play was Fallout 4. I don't think I've seen you play any other ones.
I called you down to watch me play certain moments.
Yeah.
There were certain important moments towards the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because there's a character in Fallout 4 that is very, there's a lot of memes about this character. And we were talking about him, and it's Preston. And Preston is this character in Fallout 4 who is, he himself is a soldier. He's a freedom fighter of sorts.
It's a Minuteman.
He runs the ragged remains of a faction called the Minutemen. And Preston is my bro. I love Preston, and I don't care what the internet says. The internet finds him annoying, and there's a good reason you find him annoying. It's because you didn't listen to what he was saying before he started being annoying. And that was, all of these missions are going to come to you. You can just listen to the radio and they'll give them to you. But don't worry, boss. I gotcha. You don't have to listen to the radio. I'll do it for you. Anyway, I love Preston. And Preston, if you get to know him, has a moment where he talks about he was at the edge. And it was very heartfelt. It was a very well voice acted role, talking about being on the precipice of being about to kill himself. And as my dad, I talked this guy down, and it was
soldier to soldier.
Fucking cool. Yeah. I think that was one of the moments I brought you down for.
Yeah.
I tried to shoot Preston to take his hat because he had a really cool hat. I really wanted that hat.
Not wrong,
you
but
you cannot just shoot him. Like, well, he is not a viable target.
Yeah. I just went to the console, targeted the hat.
Oh, wow. There you
cloned
go.
It, and then I had his
That's
hat.
Very crafty. I'm not really that crafty. I was like, you know, because if you remember the first, or not the first, but you remember Fallout 3, when you get to Megaton, you get introduced to that first character. I can't remember the name.
He's Lucas Sims.
Lucas. Yeah. And he's
and
got a cool hat.
You want his coat.
You want his coat and his
and
hat.
His hat,
so
yeah.
I absolutely made sure that that guy died so I could take his coat and his hat. And when I met Preston, that was the first thing I thought of.
So
it sounds slightly racist.
In the aftermath,
I didn't even see race. I just saw.
You know what? I'll say that so far, in at least Fallout 3 and Fallout 4, the black people are better dressed than the white people.
Sure. Well, yeah,
and they have cooler outfits.
Tunnel sure snakes do. Rule.
Now, I don't really. Okay, you know what? I have a tunnel snakes patch on my battle jacket.
Tunnel snakes rule. And you didn't bring that out either.
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, but. I don't think that's racist. I think that that's they just had cooler characters who happened to be black. They were just cooler.
It's haberdashist.
Yeah, they had cooler
haberdasherist. I like that better.
I'm just going to say, in the event of a apocalypse, cataclysm, whatever, et cetera, et cetera, I'm not turning my back on either of you two.
No, no.
You don't have good enough hats. You're yeah. fine. I'm the one who has to worry in this group.
Post-apocalyptic fashion is what it's all about.
So one thing that I did want to talk about the whole Fallout situation is we were talking about the style of apocalypse and what would be left over in our first segment. So let's talk about the fucking logistics of the Fallout universe as presented by Bethesda.
Yeah, there's definitely some time issues as far as how far things have degraded, what's still left over, what's not left over, why there's a can of pork and beans that's somehow still edible.
Okay, I'm going to go and fight against that. Because the whole Bethesda Fallout world is very much modeled off of your, you know, future, your retro-futuristic 1950s kind of thing, mm-hmm. where we just stacked a shit ton of preservatives into everything because we might have had to go into a Fallout shelter. I very much believe that that's why those pork and beans going to last forever.
I will plus one that because those sugar bombs and the pork and beans, all of those, I think that the prepackaged products from that era.
Yeah.
And because
they're remember, probably still good today.
Fallout is the future of a 1950s that never ended.
Yeah.
So I can get it. But I am following you here, Linzel. I think you're onto something, and it echoes something I think as well, and that is Fallout itself. I can get behind the first Fallout game. Fallout 2 followed the lore of Fallout 1 and showed the world rebuilding. And then we get to the Bethesda era, which is simply more of the same. And you're like, okay, if you follow the timeline, we're talking 100+ years have passed since the vaults were opened. Governments have built up. Boston, if you talk to people in the Commonwealth in Fallout 4, Diamond City has been there for like half a century.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why are the buildings next door not raided? Why are the safes still uncracked? Why is Boston the way it is? Because humans are enterprising and enterprising individuals. Why would that still exist in the way it was? Why would there be the rubble on the side of the street that wasn't cleaned up?
First of all, for as a way of a comparison, take a look at East Germany after World War II. It took them nearly 40 years to get the bricks off the streets in some areas. But your point's well taken. Yeah, I have. That's a distinct problem with the Bethesda period. Are any of you familiar with Project Van Buren?
Yes.
So Project Van Buren was the attempt to do Fallout 3 in the style of Fallout 1 and 2.
Interesting.
Before the Bethesda deal went through. And it's the
Van Buren was the code name.
It was the code name. And it's the Fallout we will never see. And it's the Fallout that I deeply, deeply want.
It's the Fallout with the best sideburns, too, Van Buren. Yes.
Oh, and if you go on the internet and look at, you know, why was Van Buren called Van Buren? Some of the theories relate to that.
Really? It was sideburn centric.
And apparently a lot of what went into New Vegas was kind of cribbed from some of the Van Buren story sheets.
Yep.
And a lot of people who are fans of the original Fallouts and continue to play the Bethesda games think that New Vegas was the best of that era of the 3D games.
So I'm going to ask a question. This might be heated. Who was your favorite companion
of
the Fallout series that you could have?
Well, I mean, I think we all know
Poppy's already got one.
No, she's so excited.
Yeah. It's dog meat.
Dog meat.
Of course it's dog meat. See, I
of
feel like...
Of course it's dog meat.
Dog meat's incredibly cute, but he also just loves running over mines. And that's a real liability for me and a dog.
He can't die, though.
No, but he could kill you. You're like, oh, here's a mine. Let me deactivate it. And then he's like, oh, I'm just going to run right over it.
Okay, so in Fallout 3... Definitely, he's the dumbest fucking companion ever. In Fallout 4,
he's better.
He's still pretty dumb, but he's better. But you can get a mod.
But he's so cute.
There's mods that make him avoid mines, and there's mods that make him basically always hold back.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. That's good.
So and you can put like a little kerchief on him.
Yeah.
It's so cute.
I always liked having the Mr. Handys, having the robots with you.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Gutsy or Gutso, whatever they're called.
Okay.
Codsworth.
This is difficult because I barely remember Fallout 2, so I don't remember any of the companions from that. And the Fallout 1 companion system was so terrible.
Yep.
You had to have high points in the pickpocket skill to even adjust their equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's hysterical.
That's silly.
Yeah, because the game engine was terrible. It really was. Again, like you were saying, Glenzel, quality of life improvements.
It's amazing. Whenever you try and go back and play games from the 80s and 90s, it's amazing what we dealt with back
so
then.
I would say my favorite companion, what's his name? Fox from Fallout 3.
Fox the is super the sniper. Mutant. Oh, the super mutant.
He's fucking awesome. He's really good. Although, I also really liked Raul from Fallout New Vegas.
Oh, yeah, because it's Danny fucking Trejo.
Nice.
Right. But you could also get the super mutant grandma.
Oh, God, yes.
Honestly, the New Vegas characters are good. So good. You have to get a mod that lets you just get all of them.
Yeah.
What's your favorite, Xander?
Okay. I had a real love for a Rose of Cassidy.
Cassidy.
Oh, Cassidy was the sniper.
No, Boone was the sniper.
Boone was the sniper.
Who's speaking Cassidy? Of stories that made me fucking
cry. Cassidy was the drunk.
She was the drunk.
And she was my favorite because she gave you the perk as a companion called Whiskey Rose, where you got all of the benefits of drinking alcohol and none of the negative side effects, and you could never become addicted.
What?
So you could play that game just being completely shit tanks the entire time, having all of the like endurance and strength bonuses as long as she was with you. So you all it gave me a reason to always take all of the alcohol. And also Piper from Fallout 4.
I love Piper so much.
She's the one who runs the newspaper?
Yes. Yeah.
Piper's my...
She is the awesome journalist who has a totally awesome outfit, and she is just there for freedom of the press.
She's my she's my digital girlfriend.
Yep. Every character ever made in Fallout 4, I go, you are my companion, and also with the lover's embrace.
So having only played up through Tactics, the ghoul...
Awesome.
The ghoul from 2.
Mm.
And I can't remember the ghoul's name, but you only got him for one mission, but you know.
I will say that ultimately, long term, my favorite Fallout companion is non-canon, and it is from a mod for New Vegas called Willow. She's a cool gal with a guitar who likes teddy bears, and she's interesting. She's got a good story, a good personality. She's completely voiced by fans, but she is probably the deepest interaction-wise of any companion I've ever played in a Bethesda game, aside from the Skyrim companions, again, in the mods.
What was the name of that woman from the Brotherhood of Steel? That
Veronica.
Veronica.
Felicia Day. Boo.
Really?
Not a fan.
Really? Not a fan of Veronica or not a fan of Felicia Day?
Veronica was okay, but here's the problem that you learn in New Vegas. Veronica is a melee character.
Yeah.
You know what sucks in New Vegas?
Melee.
Melee.
You 100% agree. Cazadores. Yeah. Yeah.
Veronica dies all the time.
No, but her story was like, if you follow her story to the end, that was one of the few stories in the New Vegas thing that just, I just wanted to kill myself before I had to make that decision.
I don't know if we're ready to move on, but I know that Xander's the only one who's played this. I'm curious who your favorite companion in Fallout 76 is.
There's no one out there.
There's no one.
There's no one.
There's no one anywhere in Fallout 76.
We're running pretty long.
No, but we're going to have to do this later because I could go on for probably another 20 minutes about my thoughts on Fallout 76. I will say one thing, though. The lack of any NPCs that are not robots and the fact that I don't want to get next to any actual player character that's played by a human being because fuck everybody.
Because humans are horrible.
You can almost smell the player through the computer, right?
Yep. Yeah. Is that... when I play it the way that I want to play it, which is that I've emerged from the vault, was it 25 years after the initial bombings, and you're going throughout West Virginia, and it is a gorgeous, gorgeous world that they have created. I'll give them that. That it feels like how it must feel when you emerge for the first time, which is that you are alone.
Yeah.
There is no one else out there. It is just you, and it is very solitary.
Does seem a shame given Bethesda and prior Fallout creators' history of creating interesting and inventive characters with unique and distinct stories and voice acting to have all of that just stripped away and be like, nope, here's robots to give you fetch quests.
That's what you get with an online multiplayer PvP survival shooter.
Oh, God. That was awful.
Are you guys drinking cheap vodka?
Yes.
Oh, we've switched, have we?
Yes. Oh, God.
I'm still drinking this. Well, I've moved on from Sam Adams to the Vicious Mosquito, and so I'm enjoying vicious. It. What is this vodka?
Platinum.
7X.
Seven times distilled.
The regret. What?
Extra smooth vodka 7X.
Seven times the regret.
That's what I said.
Is that a plastic bottle?
The 7X beneath our platinum name represents the seven times distillation process used in crafting this vodka. Who the hell wrote this copy? An important detail that sets us apart from the rest. The result is a remarkable vodka with a clean, refreshing, extra smooth taste that delivers a memorable drinking experience every time.
Memorable or unforgettable? Because... those are two different things.
So they ran it through seven separate Brita filters. That's how they just, yeah.
Now, the reason I'm not drinking this is because I remember when we first found this stuff, and we have a fucking crazy ass story about it. But you know what, Xander? This is your story. I'll let you tell it.
So, Biker's Dice and bars.
Here, let me pour you some more first.
Fine.
Oh, God, no.
You know what? Fuck it. Do it. I don't care anymore. So Bikers, Dice, and Bars, as a podcast group, we decided to go and take an actual field trip across country to do a very special thing just for this particular episode. And so we actually went to the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to Boston.
Beantown!
Swada, swada, swada!
What I love about Boston is that there's one bar in particular where you can go and have a Samuel Adams beer while looking at Samuel Adams' grave.
Mm. You know, what was weird is that I had to ask for the Samuel Adams because they were like, well, we mainly serve Gwinnett, but it's like, nope, I need my Sam Adams.
Yeah. So we went up to the State House, too, which is quite beautiful in the great city of Boston.
Just, mm-hmm. You know.
Very lovely.
Be careful. Be armed.
Yeah. It's Boston. Come on.
Yeah.
But I was just confused and jet-lagged the whole time.
Let me tell you, massholes everywhere.
Yeah. Got everywhere.
Thank God for concealed carry reciprocity. That's all I'm saying.
Indeed.
Yeah, the traffic in Boston's worse than I remember, too.
I don't know how it was non-existent.
I don't know how they're breeding them out there, but they were big and scary-looking dudes out there. I mean, it's like fucking...
breed them big out in there in Boston. So we just kind of went and followed the Freedom Trail a little bit and came across this lovely little bar called Prost.
Prost.
It was a little hole in the wall. It was lovely. Yeah. We just kind of stumbled upon it.
The place looked like it hadn't changed in 100 years.
I don't, you know, you say lovely. I don't know. I mean, you're right. It's like nothing had changed in that bar in 100 years. The knickknacks are the same. The atmosphere was really dead. Yeah. I mean, it was a quiet afternoon, but
maybe the time we went, I don't know.
I'm glad you knew how to find it, Xander, because there's no sign.
There was not one goddamn sign.
Were any of you guys a little concerned that they already knew our names when we got there?
I mean, sometimes you just want to go.
It was strange when I walked in. I thought I heard someone yell my name, but it was just what?
Yeah. I thought that was just because Xander knew a guy like he does everywhere.
Xander knows everybody. Everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Whenever we take our field trips, I'm just used to it.
Yeah. Even if it's 3,000 miles away, it's still the same thing. I mean, I think the thing I love about this bar, almost more than anything else, is just the fact that they have so much passion for America's pastime, which is swatter.
Mm. Yeah.
They still have, you know, the posters on the wall celebrating 175 years of Boston tradition. Mm. That I thought was really cool. And again, because it is Boston, their trifold American flags that they have up there on the shelving too, just kind of really emphasizing that patriotic spirit, really into that as well. And being one of those bars that just kind of puts the middle finger to, no, you can't have cigarettes for sale here. Yes, we can.
Oh, yeah.
Great Tortoise for life.
Great Tortoise for life. That's my brand.
The retro jukebox is what did it for me.
Plus free pool.
Free pool.
Yeah. Free pool.
They just leave the balls out. You don't even have to ask for them.
The jukebox doesn't always work, though.
18 balls in that pool set, though.
Just in case.
Weird.
You never know.
You're right. The jukebox is a little faulty sometimes. But again, it's the atmosphere that you go for, really.
The stairs were...
The
restaurant really upstairs is a little overrated.
A little overrated. Looked like there was quite a wait to get up there.
And while the bathroom was not the worst disaster zone I'd ever been in, oh my God, hover the entire time.
I'll tell you what, though. I've been in a lot of bathrooms in that area, and that was probably the cleanest.
That's right.
Yeah, plus one for the bathroom.
Only one toilet, though, for a bar that size.
Well, I mean, how many massholes have really been on there?
Fair enough.
I mean, did you guys get an opportunity to go into the employee-only area as well?
Yeah, we got a little bit of a tour.
Nobody was really stopping us.
Yeah.
A couch was pretty comfortable.
Very comfortable.
Let me tell you, the service was really laying down on the job there.
A bunch of stiffs in there. Even the regulars.
Yeah. I would say these people were nothing but skin and bones, but it was really just bones.
At least there was still plenty of drinks behind the bar. You could just help yourself.
You could. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Gwinnett for life. That's what I say.
I think I might have found a bottle of wine. It was just wine. There was nothing else about it.
Well, there was also.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's also vodka.
Let's call it that. Vodka.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but Gwinnett's actually quite delicious. And, you know, especially if you spend any time in Boston, too, you might have run into
Button Gwinnett?
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of the founding fathers.
Is he by any chance one of those guys lurking in the mire?
No.
Okay.
No. No. He's not ratting with the moles.
Okay. Ratting with the moles.
Well, you know, I give him that. I didn't see any rats. I didn't see vermin. Nope. It was a clean place.
Yeah,
no.
Good place.
Dusty.
Sure.
Yeah. Some clutter here and there. You had to kind of mind your steps.
I definitely had
places.
To dodge a death claw on the way in.
It was real easy to get a table.
It was weird, too, just because we were there just last month and they still had Halloween decorations up.
Yep.
That's not great.
Not bad.
I mean, could have been much worse.
It's almost like they were frozen in time.
Mm. Almost like they were frozen in time. It was a slice of life. It was a nice sort of expose into old Boston. And how'd you find the place, Xander?
So I found this place by, again, kind of getting real close to the State House, kind of going on the Freedom Trail. And then, of course, I always have a very good sixth sense for dive bars. and then I had to hit E to open the door of this unmarked location in the map of Fallout 4.
Right there on the Boston Common.
That's right. Just down a couple steps.
Right down a couple steps.
Yes. We are talking about the Prost Bar.
Sometimes you want to go.
Ever bar review here on Biker's Dice and Bars.
Prost.
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 But not that Prost.
Prost.
Not the Prost in Portland. No. We went to Boston.
No.
No.
digitally.
There was way less douchebags at Boston's Prost Bar than there were at the Prost in Portland.
Yeah. If you haven't played Fallout 4, there's a bar in it, and it's a tribute to probably the most famous bar in Boston.
That no Bostonians go to.
That no Bostonians go to.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yeah.
Cheers. Prost.
Prost.
Kanpai.
Salud.
Same bar, different name.
Yeah, they did a good job on this one. Mm-hmm. It was nice. It was subtle. When I found out about it, it was oddly enough the same time, more or less around the time that Cheers, the entire series, appeared on Netflix. And Poppy and I started watching it.
Well, I had been, yeah. I think I had been binge watching it. I think that was my first, if it was November of 2015, that was, yeah, I was deep, deep, deep in the weeds in my new job. And I was having a hard time. So I was binge watching Cheers like you do. So I was very well acquainted with the geography of that bar. And Nathaniel was like, "Oh, I got to show you the Cheers bar, the Prost bar." And,
yeah.
And I'm the one who told him about. I'm like, "Well, you know, Sam Malone has a safe behind his desk, behind the painting."
And I remember like walking around, and you're like, "What? You should go look for the safe." It's like, "What fucking safe are you talking about?"
There's a safe in the office, man. Don't you know?
Yeah, and there is indeed a safe there. Now I know in the show it's behind the painting. In the game, it's on the floor
behind the desk, and there was like some bobby pins and shit, and there was nothing very interesting in there.
But goddamn, Cliff Clavin and Norm
God
and Fraser Crane are all sitting at the bar.
He's got his little postman's hat. You could take the hat.
Yeah, you can take
that's exciting.
No.
Yeah,
no,
you can't do that though.
That's sacrilege.
There have been so many times.
Rules.
Okay,
I have to take the hats. No. I need the hats.
I would take the hat and wear it in his honor.
I know that we're done talking about the Fallout game, so we had like fucking 35 minutes in the last segment. But I must say that there's been many times, including what I first encountered when I went into the Prost Bar and then Prost Bar and I showed it again, is that there's sometimes you come across scenes that you don't want to disturb. Like, yeah. You yourself see a beautiful moment preserved in time and death, and you're like, you know what, One-Eyed Willie? That's your gold. And then you walk away.
Yeah.
I have to say, I would take the postman's hat.
Oh, yeah.
And I would wear it, and I'd walk around for the rest of the day doing Kevin Costner impressions.
Dirt World. How does one do a Kevin Costner impression? He sounds like a normal fucking American with no acting experience.
I don't understand why the Indians don't want to listen to me.
I killed the sheriff's man.
This one's for you, Matthew.
Why are you mad at me? Why are you mad at me?
Is that a Kevin Costner impersonation?
Yeah. Every single movie. Why are you mad at me?
So what do we think of Shenley's Oyster Bar just down the street from Prost?
Wait, what?
There's an oyster bar?
Is that Boston? Where I went and murdered a bunch of Mirelurks?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, Shenley's Oyster Bar is just a block down from Prost Bar in Fallout 4.
I've never noticed it.
Neon sign outside.
Is it all Mirelurky?
It's got some raiders hanging from it.
Oh.
That's the first indication you know you probably shouldn't be there.
Mm. Yeah, there's a couple of other bars in the Commonwealth, isn't there? I mean, there's a bar.
That's the only one that I know of specifically, because as I was trying to re-find Prost in Fallout 4, I found Shenley's Oyster Bar and realized I hadn't gone in there because there were raiders everywhere trying to murder me.
Mm.
There is this sushi / ramen table in Diamond City.
Oh, isn't there one in
Diamond
the
City.
Which is
baseball?
Worked, yeah. And it's staffed by a robot that can only say one thing, and it's in Japanese.
That sounds like it's not a huge draw.
It is essentially the same robot. Okay, so in my opinion, it's an homage to The Fifth Element, where there's a bartender at the airport, and the guy is having a drink, and the only thing the bartender can say is, "You want some more?
You want some more?
You want some more?"
Mm-hmm.
There's another bar that's beneath the mayor's office in some town as well that you have to go into for a mission, as I recall.
Well, the mayor's office is Diamond City.
Yeah, it's like down a long set of steps, and
Oh, yeah. That's where you meet the guy who wants to.
There's like somebody doing poetry or singing there.
What?
Yeah.
Somebody's doing a goddamn open mic. Okay.
No,
it's
they're singing. They're singing. It's a vocalist.
You're talking about the town run by Hancock, the ghoul.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hancock.
Hancock's my man.
I forgot about Hancock. To answer your previous question, Xander, Hancock might be my favorite companion, at least from Fallout 4.
He's very characterful.
Because his lines of dialogue are amazing. Anyway,
Hancock's great.
Yeah, so there's that bar there.
There's a bar in there with Ruby. I forget her name. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
There's a robot working the bar and there's a singer there.
Yeah, she sings.
The singer is great.
And a bunch of people that don't want to talk to you.
No, it's the, it's like the super, super, like, Cockney British version of the Mr. Gutsy.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But there's also the bar underneath Diamond City.
Mm.
There's the dugout.
The dugout. Sure.
That's great.
Yeah.
Apparently,
you
I need
get
to
a fight there.
Yeah.
And then you punch the guy to death, and then he relents, and then you punch him some more, and then they arrest you.
Yeah.
But
no, one of my favorite things when I first went to Boston, because I went to Boston first, then I got Fallout 4, then went to Boston again. But I kept sending pictures to NPC as I was walking the actual Freedom Trail in Boston. I'm like, hey, remember this? Remember this?
Yeah,
remember
this?
Every, just taking pictures continuously.
Every picture that you sent to me, I was like, yeah, I remember that. I was being shot at. Sorry, no. My dad was being shot at.
Oh.
You piece of shit.
Trigger warning.
No, my bad. And then you sent me like a plaque or something from the Freedom Trail.
I did. I sent you a postcard from the Freedom Trail explicitly because I was on the Freedom Trail.
Oh, yeah. And it was like
a main part of the plot line in Fallout 4.
Well, it's a part of the railroad story.
Sure.
The Underground Railroad.
You find one of the factions. Yeah, it seemed like that trail would have led somebody else to that Underground Railroad before you.
Well, it would have killed them on the way.
Fair enough. I guess that's true.
Wasn't it like a weird, like, circular postcard? I think I remember you getting that.
Yeah. Anyway. So when you go to Boston, they all of the placards are circular, and it has an actual very colored brick thing that takes you to all of the most prominent parts of the founding of the American Revolution as it goes through Boston. And so when you play Fallout 4, you do have to follow the Freedom Trail to get more things done to find out about the Underground Railroad. So it was really fun to go and actually go and. When I went to Boston the second time going, I know this city better than I have the first time around. And that's weird because I literally have just spent 80 hours in virtual Boston.
So since this is our bar talk segment and we tend to talk about booze and drinking, did you visit the Gwinnett Brewery while you were in the Commonwealth?
So Gwinnett Brewing doesn't exist.
I know, but it does in Fallout 4.
Sure does, and I sure as hell went there in Fallout 4. The Beantown Saloon, I think it is the actual bar in real Boston that is just outside the old Granary Cemetery, where there's a giant obelisk to where Benjamin Franklin's parents are buried, and it's also where you can drink a Samuel Adams beer while going and looking at Samuel Adams' actual grave.
So is the Gwinnett Brewery in Boston, in the Commonwealth, in Fallout 4, an analog for Sam Adams, or does it represent another beer that we don't know about?
It represents both the Samuel Adams Brewery and the foundation of that in Boston brewing culture, as well as, I think his name was Gwinnett Button. It might have been Button Gwinnett, but he was actually one of the lesser-known founding fathers from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts in Boston, who was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And so that is a reference to both Adams and Gwinnett, the signer of the Declaration.
So you actually got to see the memorial for Benjamin Franklin's parents?
Yep.
Convenient. Do you know whose birthday it is today?
Yours?
It's also Benjamin Franklin.
Really?
Oh, get the fuck out!
So I'd like to propose a toast to one of the first printers in America, one of the first libertines in America.
Yeah.
And one of the first major drinkers in America.
To Benjamin Franklin.
And happy birthday, Just Jacob.
Thank you very much.
Happy birthday. And we've started drinking just for you.
No, you guys were drinking last week.
It was my birthday. I gave up on alcohol free January.
I will say we're going to close this segment out with a typical toast common to the bar that we just reviewed. You ready? Prost!
Prost!
Clink.
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 This is the last call for alcohol this evening. Drink up, drink up, drink up, and order again. This is the last call for alcohol, get going. Drink up, drink up, drink up, then order again.
Something we don't normally do that we had actually talked about doing when we first started this podcast, we kind of forget to do it because we're usually pretty drunk by the time this segment comes around and we start to close everything out. Let's talk about what we've been drinking.
Fuck.
And our thoughts on it. So I'll lead in. I've been drinking this White Christmas. Now, I've had a couple of... I'm drunk.
Wow. When did that happen?
Somebody realized how many were in front of him.
I just realized how many dead soldiers were in front of me here.
I'm dreaming.
I've had two of these vicious mosquitoes, and those are pretty good, but I'm going to
vicious
leave
blood bugs
to talk about. Yeah, fucking Cazadores. But the Sam Adams White Christmas, I want to give a note here that it is indeed hazy and crisp. It says it's hazy, crisp, and bright. I don't agree with that third word.
I don't
That's
either.
That's a lie. But hazy and crisp, definitely. I taste it. And
it's got nutmeg and cinnamon in it.
There has been a recent revival in the last year of something called haze or hazy style beverages here in Portland.
Unfiltered beers.
Mm-hmm. I haven't liked it. It's not been that good to me.
Oh.
This is what I would describe as hazy. It's got a flavor that's hard to pin down, and there's a little bit of a fizzle, but it spreads out in the back of my tongue. And that, to me, is hazy.
I'm just going to put out there that I think it's the combination of the Pacific Northwest. We are going to hop this to within an inch of its life. Ugh. Plus the unfiltering that's not doing it for you.
You know, I love beer. And the Pacific Northwest, it wasn't until I moved here that I started drinking a lot more beer and liking beer. I don't really like beers that are popular in the Pacific Northwest.
Give me a good Northeastern style IPA any day.
So your
of week.
Thoughts.
Fuck yes.
Your thoughts on the White Christmas.
My thoughts are that I would just drink this all year long.
Yeah.
I've had Sam Adams Boston Lager. I would not normally drink the Boston Lager. This is something that I would drink casually, and I don't feel that this is seasonal.
It doesn't taste super Christmassy to me either, but it does. It is quite tasty.
It is, yeah.
It's not too pronounced. It's just kind of about right for I can drink this for a while, and I'll be happy about it.
I've kicked back three of these so far, and I don't
apparently.
That's tasty.
What do we think about the Vicious Mosquito from Sun River Brewing?
It's got a little bit of a burn that...
Really?
Burn's not the right word. You know that feeling when you are... Dehydration, that's what it is. It's got a little bit of dehydration in my mouth. I feel that every time I have one of these, I want to drink like three bottles of water.
It leaves you...
Yeah.
So it has survival mode of fallout.
It's too heavy for me. It has too much of that like gummy... it's hard to describe, but I do not care for it.
I'm going to go and speak out in very much defense of the Vicious Mosquito. I like drinking pine trees.
Mm-hmm.
That's delicious to me. I like hops, and I like the fact that it almost feels like kind of drinking pure pine sap.
Mm-hmm.
And I am into that.
Yeah, you know, gummy.
I generally don't like licking trees. No. Jacob?
So, I like just about everything I've had from Sun River. It's one of my favorite breweries. But they describe it right on the can as liberal use of fine Northwest hops to define this resinous IPA. While I will say the use of hops in this is liberal, it is conservative compared to many of the breweries we have around here.
I am of the general opinion that anybody who liberally uses hops is doing so to mask a bad brew.
Mm.
Now, I may be wrong.
Those are fighting words for some people.
That is what happens here in the Pacific Northwest with a lot of microbrews. Yes. I feel that people who can't create a good flavor on their own are just like, all right, give it more hops.
Yeah, you're looking at a beer that's only got an IBU of 70, which in this area is low.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Out of?
Oh, let's see.
Unlimited.
Yeah, unlimited,
there's no cap.
I mean,
its power level is over 9,000.
Yes.
Are we talking a level of cap like that, or is it more of a...
The highest IBU I think I've seen in a beer has been like 130?
I saw a 160, but... most IPAs I see run between low end 75 to 100, 110. Yeah.
Do you offhandedly even begin to know what something like hops are? Bitterness is pretty bitter. If you don't know, don't say it. I'll reference it later.
Don't remember.
Okay.
But this,
know the beer well.
Yeah, this is 70 IBUs, and I think, you know, talking especially about Poppy's comment on it, it's 7% alcohol.
Yeah.
That's no joke.
It's solid. It's a lot in a can with a lot of pine resin. I enjoy this. I would, if I was going in and fishing around in a cooler at a picnic, I would gladly pull it out.
Sure. I really enjoy this beer.
Yeah. There are other IPAs that I would take over this, but it's a really solid Workman IPA.
I must note that the White Christmas from Sam Adams, I can't tell because of the positioning of their labeling.
Gosh.
It's actually kind of awkward. If it's 8 IBUs or 18 IBUs.
It's 8.
Yeah. It's, I think that's 80.
That seems more likely.
However, it's 5.8% alcohol per volume.
And Jacob, what did you think about the Platinum 7X?
Get the fuck out of my house with that.
I have it in writing that you requested I bring cheap vodka.
Delete.
It kind of tasted to me like
cheap vodka.
Cold filtered Brahmin piss.
So
kind of, and it felt like going down what it would be like to go and take a shot out of a Rad Scorpion's Stinger.
Mm. Huh.
Pretty sure that sounds like a good time.
It sure isn't.
some flaked off ghoul skin in there. Ew, brewed by the best super mutant brewers.
No, absolutely not. Because flaked off ghoul skin would have a flavor that actually would be generally preferable over to what I got from Platinum 7X.
So Platinum 7X I've always been the opinion that it's better than like Nikolai vodka or Silver Wolf vodka. But the only reason it's better is it tastes like they added a post distillation sweetener of some kind to it.
Well, dear listener, I do not recommend for you to check this out. Again, it's vodka in a plastic bottle. It's something that
it's
normally
a pretty plastic bottle.
Don't endorse.
And right now we're sharing some Evan Williams 1783 small batch Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey.
Okay, dear God, we got to close this out before it spreads. Forget what you heard. Don't drink that. It's awful. You've been listening to Bikers, Dice, and Bars, recorded here in Portland, Oregon. Please, please prepare your larders, gather your gasoline, get your bikes ready to survive the apocalypse, because if you keep drinking this, the world's going to end.
Keep your powder dry.
Do you think we could get sponsorship from Platinum Vodka?
I don't think Platinum Vodka can sponsor themselves. When's the last time you saw an ad?
And on that note, you've been listening to us drinking. It's been wonderful. I am NPC.
I am Jess Jacob.
Dr. Xander Cherrymander.
Poppy Beaujolais.
And Tinsel, but with an L.
And once again, we wish to remind you...
You've been listening to Radio Freedom. Stay safe out there, folks. And always drink responsibly.
Rubber side down.
May your vats always make the mysterious stranger appear.
And save me a couple of Nuka-Colas.
And thanks for listening. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Hot dog.
Thanks for joining us, friend. We've reached the end of Bikers, Dice, and Bars.